We're turning the radio backyard fence into a table today. You're about to hear from a guest who wants to challenge you to do something that could change your life. He says it's simple and so natural, you may be surprised at what a difference it can make. This one piece of advice can improve the way you see the world. It can change your family forever. It'll help your kids succeed. It will improve your relationships. And it will cost you nothing but extra, but time. Will you risk it? Will you give it a try? What is this challenge? And why could it be the key to changing your life and your family's lives? Find out straight ahead at chrisfabrylive.org. Welcome to our continuing conversation here at the back fence. Big thank you to our team. Ryan McConaughey doing all things technical. Trisha's back in the saddle today. Gabby T will be answering your calls. And we would not be able to come to you with this invigorating discussion if it weren't for our backfence friends and partners who support us. An email went out today for you partners. Those of you who give a gift each month, you can receive our thank you this month. And if you give a one-time gift, you can do that. But if you are a backfence partner, you give each month, then you have access to it. Plus the video I send out every Thursday, my backfence post. This month, we are offering the classic by Philip Keller, A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It's hardcover, beautifully illustrated. You won't believe how peaceful your heart's going to get looking at these sheep in the pasture. If you feel a need to lie down in that green pasture, let me send this to help you restore your soul. Give a gift today at chrisfabrylive.org. Become a friend or a partner. We'll send you a copy of W. Philip Keller's A Shepherd Looks at the Psalm 23. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org, or you can call us 866-95-FABRY, 866-953-2279. Hats off to friends and partners in April. We appreciate your support. Dr. Ryan Rush is pastor at Kingsland Baptist Church in Katy, Texas. I told him that if I got onto I-10, which is just outside, I'd drive to I-10 in about 2 minutes. And I pointed my car east, I'd get to Katy in about 14 and a half hours. So we're not going to do that. I'm really glad for technology. He has spent more than 20 years working in ministry. And during that time, he's been on a mission to connect church and home life, becoming a national voice for the faith at home movement. Adjunct professor at Liberty University, he taught theology of family course there. He currently teaches doctoral students in the marriage and family program at Dallas Theological Seminary. He's written at least 3 books. I'm sure he's thinking about 3 or 4 more. The one we're going to talk about today is called Restore the Table. You can find out more about it at the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Dr. Ryan, how in the world are you today?
Chris, it's great to be with you. I'm doing wonderfully. It's beautiful weather in West Houston, Katy, Texas. Good to be with you.
Now, a big question is, do you root for the Astros or the Rangers?
I'm diehard Astros where we are. I have dear friends who actually do love the Lord and root for the Rangers, and they're having a good year.
But, so there is.
We're all about Astros. Confirmation.
Yeah. That's good. See, I love the Astros because I grew up a Cincinnati Reds fan, and they made a trade, and Joe Morgan came from the Astros, the best trade that ever
happened. That's right. That's so funny. Yeah. Yeah, people are still a little bitter about that around here, the old timers, but that's true.
All right, let's talk about this table thing, because as soon as I saw this, I thought, we've got to have you on here to talk about this. Why did this rise to the surface in your heart so that you wanted to look, you know, further at it in the scripture, but also for us from a cultural, social, scientific perspective?
Yeah, Chris, I'm so glad you asked. So as a pastor, I'm constantly looking for ways to connect what we do at church with the homes that we serve. That's really what gets me up early in the morning, is thinking about how we can equip parents to be the primary faith trainers of their kids. And so about 9 years ago, we issued a challenge, a 40-day challenge to our people, asking them to commit to 5 meaningful mealtimes a week with the ones they loved, and to do that for 40 days. And I thought this might be a good first step to kind of build a new habit. It wouldn't be necessarily that consequential, but it would lead to other good things. What I didn't realize is how significant that step would be for a lot of our households. When they carved out the time every week, things began to change. Marriages grew stronger. Connections between kiddos that had not been there started to open up. Students were opening up to their parents about some things they hadn't discussed in the past, and secrets were revealed, all sorts of things that ended up being blessings to these households. And I recognized that we were onto something. I mean, I really believe now, I mean, I'm convinced, Chris, that the table in the home, meaningful mealtimes, are profoundly important in a Christian home.
Define meaningful mealtime.
Yeah, so threefold. It's not complicated. Meaningful mealtimes are scheduled. That means you have to put it on the calendar and you don't just wait for it to happen. That's what most people want. I haven't met a person that says, oh, we don't really want to eat together. You just get busy. So they're scheduled. Meaningful mealtimes are special. And that doesn't mean four courses, and we're not trying to reinvent a Norman Rockwell painting. I'm talking about they're elevated in importance, which primarily means you turn off the technology. The TV goes off, the phones are set aside, not just on silent, but out of the way, so that you're having meaningful conversation. And finally, meaningful mealtimes are spiritual. So we're inviting the Lord to the table, and that's it. If families will just do those three things, I believe the mealtimes gain enormous meaning.
And so what were some of the things that people in the church said happened when they did that for 40 days?
Right. So first of all, Chris, I think what surprised people is they did not realize how much they had lost in their normal routines of mealtimes. So when you set aside the technology alone, you recognize, my goodness, we haven't had a meaningful conversation in a long time because we're always running or in the car or we're making small talk. But if you set aside the distractions and you have the pause that happens naturally with a meal, people started to talk about the things that matter. And so the most important result that we heard over and over again were parents understanding where their kids were spiritually that they haven't really discussed in a long time. So they recognized they had some work to do, or there were some outside influences that were impacting their kids in ways they didn't recognize. There were also some people in our church who were disconnected from their families or living alone or single, who were able to reconnect with others in our church, whether other families or with singles together. And they started to cultivate relationships, and they didn't recognize how much they had missed those meaningful connections. So I could go on and on, but it was just really cool to watch.
So I can hear a teenager hearing this, and dad or mom say, it is meaningful mealtime, we're going to have this. And in their mind, they think, oh, I'm going to get preached to. They're going to make me do a Bible study, and they're going to talk to me, and it's going to be an agenda thing. And it sounds like you could talk about scripture, but it doesn't sound like the agenda is not there. Am I right?
No, exactly, Chris. And it's quite the opposite. In fact, this is very personal to me because as a pastor, I appreciate family devotions. I'm a fan, obviously, of sort of the idea of the family altar that's been preached for so long. But as a pastor, that often didn't work at my house. And the reason is my girls always sensed that it was a little bit contrived and it felt more like a lesson plan than a conversation. And so those didn't work really well for us. But when we set aside the mealtime and we remove the distractions, we might just have a discussion question to kick us off, or we might just have a topic for the day and go around the table. And all of a sudden, it didn't feel like a lesson. It just felt like an opportunity for the barriers to come down and for us to have a meaningful conversation. So moms and dads don't have to turn this into a devotion necessarily. It's going to happen much more naturally than you think.
What might happen if you committed to having five meaningful mealtimes with the people you love each week, and then, as an added to that, share one of those same meals once a month with somebody outside of your normal circle? What might happen? I'm going to open the phone lines because I want to hear from you. I asked this question on Facebook about why is it special to get together and to have a meal together? What happens? What do you sense would happen if you started doing this again, or now that you do it with your family? What happens in your home? Here's the number, 877-548-3675. Pastor Ryan Rush is with us today. He's the author of Restore the Table, Discovering the Powerful Connections of Meaningful Mealtimes. It's right down the center of the target of our program today on Chris Fabry Live. Go to the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Find out more right there. More straight ahead. I ask this question on Facebook. Give a reason to have meals together. What good things happen over shared meals? Craig says, just to have normal human interaction. I always add, thank you for this time together when I ask the Lord to bless our supper. Cheryl says, I'm Italian. Italians always eat dinner together. I've made dinner for my husband for the past 50 years. He's done the dishes. I feel that spending this time like this gives us time to reconnect every day. I think it's important to take the time to sit down, share your day, and slowly share a meal together. Do you do that? And what did COVID do to all this? What are the spiritual ramifications of this? We're talking with Pastor Ryan Rush today at the Radio Backyard Fence. If you go to chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see Restore the Table. It actually comes out today. So happy release day, Ryan, for the book.
Thank you, Chris. Man, I appreciate that.
Take me to Somaliland in Africa, because this is how you begin. And tell us the people that were around that table.
Yeah, so Somaliland is a special place to us now. We went a few years ago. This is a nation that's pretty much closed off to the gospel. It is 100% Muslim nation, and yet they really need help. They needed some schools. We were unapologetic about our Christian faith, but said we'd love to come in and partner with them. And so they welcomed us in for that reason. As you can imagine, we're a little bit standoffish as we dedicated that first school that time. And we're trying to get to know them, but we recognize that we have a little bit different agendas. We went to a meal after the dedication of the school. There were about seven of us from the United States and several bigwigs officials from the nation sitting around this table, and we started to eat. Now, imagine, you know, several beef dishes or meat dishes around the table. We didn't really want to know what we were eating. Let me put it this way. Somaliland is the number one exporter in the world of camel. Mm-hmm. So there's probably some there, but lots of gravy, and that's not a bad thing. All that to say, we're trying to make small talk. And once the meal comes out, I start to visit with the guy next to me who's the head of the education department of the nation of Somaliland. And I asked about his family. Well, who doesn't want to talk about their family? So pretty soon pictures come out and we start to share. And then I asked about how he got involved in education, and he started to share his passion. And before long, I'm looking around this table of 20 or so, and there's magnificent conversation happening all over the place. The barriers have come down, and we're just enjoying a meal together. And that tends to happen over and over again. My wife just got back from Somaliland 3 weeks ago, where we dedicated our second facility, this time a school for special needs children, the first of its kind in the entire nation. And I don't believe that could have happened without that meal. I mean, God used the meal to build the bridges.
What does camel taste like?
I'm not going to say like chicken. That's what you want me to say, Chris, exactly. And I refuse to see it. That's Let's say elk. It tastes okay. Like elk.
Yeah, a little gamey, huh? Because this is an aside, but it fits here. I went to the Possum Festival down in Wausau, Florida. Every year in the second Saturday in August or first Saturday, they have the Wausau Possum Festival. And the reason they do it is because during the Depression, that's all they had. They had possum and taters, the vernacular, and it kept them alive. There was a guy that had been born down, you know, right down there since 1917. And so that was my question, is what does it taste like? And the reaction was, you know, chicken first, but it's a little greasier. It's more like raccoon, or which I never had either, or something that's gamey like that. But it was all about that food that had been provided for them,
right?
That really gave them life. And so that's what you're talking about as well. When we're gathered around this food, this food gives us, it keeps us going, doesn't it?
There's a sense where food in the Bible is always linked with identification with somebody else or connection in meaningful terms. The one listener that sent the message there about being Italian, Chris, I talk about this in my book, but that had a meaningful impact on my life as well. when I traveled about 20 years ago to Italy with my wife and kids, we'd go in a restaurant and we would just have the general, you know, you go in, get your food, get out. And it seemed like everybody around us in the tables near us were there when we got there. And when we got up to leave, they were just pretty much getting started. And they made it an evening, an event. And I realized we're missing something in the West, in the U.S. Quite often, because we just have missed out on the community, the connection that we're supposed to have around the table.
Going through this, see, my wife and I have 9 children, and they're grown. Most of them are out of the house. We have 3 that are still here. But most of the time when we do dinner, it's very much an individual thing because they're different diets and we right. all don't eat the same thing. And we eat at different times because, you know, we're coming and going. But I realized just in going through your book how often I will retreat to some kind of, you know, now I can watch a video or I can watch the sports mm-hmm. thing that I didn't get to see, the NCAA or the women's, you know, the games that happened last night. I can see the recap of that while I eat my meal. And there's right. nothing wrong with that. But mm-hmm. but then I realized, but there's an opportunity here to connect with the other people that you really care about. And you could do that another time. But it seems like in the Gospels, in Scripture, as you just said, this was a time when you shared life together intentionally, right?
Yes, absolutely. I think about Psalm 128, Chris, which is one of the most beautiful family pictures that we have in the Scriptures, which talks about the man who blesses the man who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. And it says, your children will be as olive shoots where around your table. So it's this picture that there's growth happening around the table as you connect over a meal. And so, yes, there's other times that you could do this. But what would, we're already having to eat anyway, so why not reclaim that particular time where we already have a natural mechanism where everybody can be around the table as it used to be, what used to be natural, and make it an intentional time of connection?
Here's what another person said about this when I asked the question, give a reason to have meals together. Laughter, lots of laughter. My mother-in-law has lived with us for 2 years. We eat separate at the table every night. My husband and I have been empty nesters for almost 10 years. It's been good having her here and having a routine. Lots of love and laughter at the kitchen table. And then Jim says, intimacy. It's one of the most intimate things people can do together. Everything else good can flow from such a starting place. You agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, you know, we've talked about the scriptural backing for meal for most of the time so far, Chris, but the scientific backing of the importance of mealtimes in the family is profound and robust, and it keeps growing. It shouldn't surprise us that science is catching up with what scripture said all along, but the idea is there's deep connections. There's all sorts of correlations with 5 meaningful mealtimes a week. That's not the wording they use, but mealtimes with your loved ones or with parents, whether it has to do with the obvious, you know, healthier lifestyles and healthier diets, but even mental health and behavioral issues and drug and alcohol use and all these things, you have more favorable results when families are eating together. So we see that. Now, why? My PhD work that I put together over the last few years, I study leadership and something called attachment, a psychological study of attachment. And without boring everybody, the point is we are hardwired by God to be emotionally connected with other people. That doesn't surprise us, and that begins with moms and dads. Well, now we know scientifically that there are ways that those connections are built in our minds and in our hearts. Physical touch, meaningful touch, eye contact, words of affirmation, time together, all those things that are brought up and that listener alluded to that happen in a very intimate way, naturally around the table. That's one of the reasons it's so important.
where did we get away from this? Because I watched The Waltons as a kid, you know, in the 70s, and which was set in the Depression era. And I heard my parents talk about, you know, what breakfast was like and what dinner was like together or supper. And you saw that every time when the Waltons sat down for dinners, like they were all there. There was a huge table around, and they had an awful lot of food for going through the Depression. But it was a time when they did that. And was it the industrialization? Was it the World War? What happened?
Well, I talk about that a little bit in my book, Chris, because God would not have created something so special and then made it really difficult for us. You know, it was intended to be natural, and it was for a long time. We had the Industrial Revolution, which created vocational separation from the home for the first time. And then we had educational separation in large part in the nation in the late 1800s, where others were teaching our kids for the first time. All those things are great, and it's not an indictment on those, but what we need to understand is what used to be natural now has to be intentional. You go to World War II and World War I, and you had tremendous emotional separation by a lot of men in the world and in the West who were there but not emotionally connected because they didn't know how to, you know, kind of navigate what they'd walk through. I can't tell you how many funerals I preached where somebody said, well, this is for Dad. He never told us he loved us. He showed us, you know, by working hard, something like that. Mm-hmm. So we had that disconnect. And then we get into what's really caused the problem to be exponentially worse, the digital revolution. In the last 25 years, where you and I both know, we can go into a restaurant today, any restaurant, look around, and you'll see families eating together. But you'll see mom, dad, kids, even grandparents, staring at their phones. And they might as well be miles away, even though they're at the same table. So what used to be natural in so many ways now must be intentional or it's not going to happen.
So the meaningful mealtime to be special, you say no TV, no phones. So you take the phone and, you know, if somebody's got an important call that's supposed to come in, you know, the car's ready or whatever, you make room for that. But pretty much you say, let's just have no technology. Let's just do face-to-face here rather than, you know, looking or emailing or texting while we're eating, right?
Absolutely. So that, Chris, that can be, there may be an emergency call, but that becomes the exception rather than the rule. And what so often happens in a lot of our families is, yes, we're having conversation, but the phone is upright, you know, kind of like you have the fork on the left and the knife on the right and the phone in the top right corner next to your drink, you know. And so you're just watching until in case it buzzes and you might get some message. That's not okay. So maybe some people put a bowl in the kitchen and just say, hey, everybody put the phone in the bowl and we'll get them after the meal. And if you have an expected call, then maybe you hang on to yours and turn it upside down. But it's hard to even express how dramatically that changes the tone of the conversation and the intimacy at the meal if you're willing to cut out the cell phones during that time.
I think part of this conversation is to give you, as you listen, friend, a vision for what might happen around your table that's not happening. If it is happening already, God bless you. Thank you. You know, join in here. Call me with your story. But if it's not, and you long for this, and I think there is part of what Ryan is saying that we all do long for this deeper connection with each other and with God, then this may be one of those steps that you can take. For Chris says this on Facebook, people tend to share their stories around the table, whether they're funny or sad. Before our life group, we share a meal every week. We get to know each other on a more personal level, connecting with each other. We find out our hobbies, movies we enjoy, hopes, dreams, goals, fears, children, grandchildren, etc. That's it, isn't it?
That is so good. Yes. And the key to what Chris is saying there is there's something about a mealtime that allows for barriers to be broken quickly that I don't know of any other substitute to do. So yes, it works wonderfully in small groups when you're connecting others in the body. And by the way, that's exactly what happened when we look at the early church in Acts chapter 2. They were gathering for meals on a regular basis to do so. But you know where else it works? If you can connect with people outside your normal circle, or maybe somebody from a different worldview or culture, something really happens that's profound when you share a meal together. And I have seen this so many times. if you sit down and say to somebody, hey, let's get together and talk about worldviews, they're probably going to push back. But if you invite them to barbecue, at least in Texas, most people are going to say yes, and you have the opportunity to have the same conversation.
As long as you don't serve camel, right?
That's right. Yeah, we generally frown on that. But I'll tell you what, I would prefer camel over the possum invitation any day of the week.
I hear you. But, give possum a chance one of these days.
Hey, man.
Didn't somebody sing about
that's
that?
That's probably not going to happen. I'll just be honest with you, Chris.
You're saying
probably
give not possum happen. A chance. Okay, and here's the other thing that people are saying on Facebook is, teens open up during these times. I want you to talk about that when we come back from a break. Let me give you our phone number, 877-548-3675. I want you to tell me what significant thing has happened in a meal that you've spent together at home, or maybe a meal that you've had at church and people open up. What good things have happened to you over a meal? 877-548-3675. If you go to chrisfabrylive.org, you'll see more about our guest today, Pastor Ryan Rush. He's written, along with Ken Abraham, Restore the Table, Discovering the Powerful Connections of Meaningful Meal Times. It releases today. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org. The Sloppy Joe story's coming up straight ahead. I've been telling you about CareNet for the last few months. It's the pro-abundant life ministry. It's across the country, committed to the unborn child, yes, but also to the born child, the pregnant mother, the father, and the extended family. If you go to chrisfabrylive.org, click the green CareNet button, and you'll see a thank you for Moody listeners, and then you'll see the passion that CareNet has to turn your pro-life stance, your pro-life conviction, the feeling that you have, into action. Drawing from CareNet's 50 years of experience, Making Life Disciples is geared to help your church establish a team that can walk alongside women and men who are facing pregnancy decisions right there in your congregation or in your community, and form meaningful partnerships with your local pregnancy centers. The training that they are offering will help you turn your church into a central point of compassion right there in the middle of your community. Click the green CareNet button today at chrisfabrylive.org. You'll see more about it right there. Go to chrisfabrylive.org and click CareNet today. Pastor Rush, that probably hits a couple of buttons in your life too, to make that, your pro-life conviction to do something about it rather than just talking about it, right?
Yeah, and in fact, that's such a wonderful ministry. CareNet has made a huge impact, as you know, for three decades. One of the really special moments in the life of our local church, a few years ago, we were able to bring in the leaders of our local crisis pregnancy center and pay off their mortgage. Wow. And just see how that could propagate that. So there's a lot of tangible ownership in our congregation for the local cause and what the pregnancy center is doing. And it's just an extraordinary kingdom-focused thing that I think is going to be one of those things when we get to heaven that we're going to look back on and say, we got to be in on something eternal. So thanks for all you're doing, and we're CareNet fans. That's awesome.
Amen. Amen. I saw one of the things that I really liked about the book was that you don't just talk about food and having mealtimes. You give recipes as well. And there's one in here, and as soon as I read the Sloppy Joe recipe, it's like, oh, I got to try that because that looks really good. But there's a funny story about Sloppy Joe's you tell.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's painful. I try to tell the stories warts and all. So Lana and I, my wife and I, have been married for 32 years. In the first year, I came home one day, and Lana was making Sloppy Joe's. And I said, hey, listen, they were just okay. I'll just be honest. And I wasn't smart enough at that time in my marriage, Chris, to just eat it and say thank you. I said, hey, what recipe are you using for these Sloppy Joes? And she said, well, Ryan, there's not a recipe. I just open up the can. It was like Manwich or something. And I said, no, actually, there's a recipe. You might want to talk to my mom and get a recipe, which was not really well received. It was just like husband, marriage 101, man. And I am failing, in year one. So she did next time she talked to my mom, and she was just doing it sort of as a slight on me to say, I'm going to show him. She just uses a different can of something. And my mom says, no, there actually is a recipe. So this and this, it's not complicated. Anyway, so Lana made it, and we have that as a regular part of, you know, every now and then we have Sloppy Joes. But I promise you, there are very few instances when we're eating the Sloppy Joes that I don't have to hear about my idiocy in endorsing my mother's food as I'm eating hers. It wasn't the brightest moment of my life.
Well, even Lana agreed with you and your mom that this really was tasty. And I looked at it's got some white vinegar in it. It's got Worcestershire sauce. And, that's worth the price of the book, the new Sloppy Joes. But it's more than just about food. And I want to get to a really important question that I had. We went through a revelation in the last few months at our church, and there's a verse in Revelation that just jumped out at me. I'll get to that. First, I want to talk with Deborah in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Deborah. You're on the program. Go right ahead.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. I just wanted to share that you have to be very intentional. My children, after my divorce of 15 years, I decided that family time was really even more important. And even though they were involved in extracurriculars, because this was before cell phones were really a big thing, they were aware, they were around, but they weren't predominant like they are now. And they were in sports, extracurricular activities, and Model United Nations, speech and debate, football, and soccer and all of that. But we had dinner every day. And the way I got them to buy into it is they got to choose the dinner music. It rotated. They got to choose the dinner music.
Love that.
And then the other person got to choose. They got to be the person that said the prayer. So some prayers were longer than others. Some were more elaborate than others. Dinner time was not always at the same time, but dinner time was together every day. And that continued all the way through high school. So if you're intentional about it and get them in some way to buy into it, it can happen.
So, Deborah, what did that do then, now as you look back on her? What did that do in the process of your family?
They still enjoy being together. Like this past Easter, they decided among themselves that we were going to eat dinner together. My son, my oldest son, has married into a family that does not value dinner time like we do, but they seem to enjoy it when we do it, and they still like to come around, and they value dinner time, and they're very close-knit. It makes a difference.
Yes.
It really does make a difference. It's a challenge, because sometimes we had dinner at 8:30 instead of, 5 o'clock, but, And they help cook. I mean, I had boys, they know how to cook. And they know how to set a plate and set the table.
And you share so much. See, Deborah, and I can hear in your voice, you share so much more than just the passing of the food and the news of the day. You share the character, the struggles that you're going through, and the kids hear the struggles that the parents are going through, or the parent of a single parent family. That's gold, isn't it, Ryan?
It really is. Deborah, if I was with you right now, I would give you a standing ovation. Way to go. And it's such an important reminder, because there's a lot of people who are in homes with challenges, or someone has walked out, or a parent is raising children on their own. First of all, you're not alone. Find a local church that'll surround you, but you can make a way. Deborah's done this. I've heard this so many times. I spend a whole chapter sharing a friend's story who raised her two daughters after her husband was not there and walked out. Very similar scenario. This is something you can use the mealtime to fill in the gaps of a lot of things that might otherwise be lost. So I totally agree with Deborah. What a great story.
But it takes it takes a commitment, and it almost sounds like, you know, if you move the time, ritual is a part of this, and at the same time every day, if you can do that. But there are so many people who are on the road and on the run, and the after-school activities and all of that. You're not saying jettison everything that you're doing in order to come home at the same time. You're just saying make it work however you can make it work, right?
Not at all. We have come across people who have some of their meaningful meal times, their most effective ones, at breakfast. Others who meet at a restaurant. I think back when we were raising our girls, some of our meaningful meal times were when we popped the back of the Suburban and we'd sit on the hatch there or whatever and eat barbecue outside to have a picnic before soccer practice or ballet rehearsal or something like that. You just make it work where you are. The point is that you're together, that you have meaningful conversation, and you invite the Lord to the meal. That can be any time and place.
And there's as I was reading through their food memories that your wife uses, she talked about desserts. And I always thought as I was reading through that section, boy, we could do a program and have people call in about their food memories, what they associate with pain and struggle or loss in their lives, you know, something that people brought to the house after a funeral and they associate that food with that. But I want you to take us to the book of Revelation and go to the place where Jesus is standing at the door and knocking. And we're going to do that when we come back from this break. Pastor Ryan Rush, Restore the Table, discovering the powerful connections of meaningful meal times, complete with recipes. Just go to chrisfabrylive.org to find out more. Thanks again for your support at the Radio Backyard Fence. Philip Keller's A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. It's a beautiful hardcover illustrated edition of this book. I'd love to put that in your hands during the month of April. Give a gift of any size at chrisfabrylive.org, chrisfabrylive.org, where you'll also find out about our featured resource today. And I'm still looking at Facebook. What happens when you get together with people for a meaningful mealtime? Karen says, for us, a closeness and constant time and place to connect is at the meal. With a son on the autism spectrum, consistency is important for his routine and sense of security. The best time for us is around the supper table. Michelle says, eye contact. Ruth says, conversation, modeling proper behavior and love for your family, showing each person there that they are important, praying together over the meal, sharing and caring. It sounds like everybody agrees this is a really good idea, Ryan,
right.
But
yes.
It's how do we do this? How do we make it happen in our fast-paced lives? And I thought that COVID and what we went through, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought that would foster more of this family and show us the importance of family mealtime. It looks like it's done. It hasn't done that for everybody. What do you think?
Right. I think it's done the opposite for a lot of families. Now, there are some in our church that had already taken the challenge and others who said, you know what? I recognize my role as the primary discipler of my children. And so I know I need to really step that up in this moment. And they took advantage of the time. Unfortunately, we had so many distractions available to us during COVID that when we were separated from others in our lives and we were kind of trapped at home, some were more trapped than others, but we tended to fragment even more by going to our corners and going back to the technology that's available to us. And so we're seeing some of the injurious issues with kids even today. I mean, studies keep coming out. The picture is more bleak than we thought for some from an education standpoint or social standpoint, those kiddos that missed a lot. So we can't go backward and redo that or undo it, but you can change some things right now. And you're right, Chris. I've never come across the family that said, we really don't have any interest in eating together. I think most of us recognize inherently how wonderful it would be. It's just a matter of making the decision. I mean, this is something you can do. 5 meaningful mealtimes a week is not an impossible mountain to climb. You can do this. Most of the people I know are eating at some point through the week already.
And that's when I first saw it. I thought, okay, five, you know, is it good? Sunday through Saturday. And when are you going to, because I always think of, it's got to be dinner. Yeah. It's got to be dinner. But you're saying no. It can be early. It could be middle of the day. You know, on the weekend, even with everything that's going on, you can have this, or especially if you go in the suburban up in the trunk.
Right.
So your challenge is have five meaningful meal times with people you love each week. And then part of that is once a month, share one of those same meals with someone outside your normal circle. What does that mean and why is it important?
Exactly. We all have people around us, at least tangentially, maybe the person at the cleaners or someone at the office or at school or another family on the Little League team that you've spent enough time with to know that you're not from the same worlds from a philosophical or spiritual background. But most often, if you'll invite somebody to a meal and say, hey, I just love to get to know you, let's get together, they'll come to a meal where they might not come to a Bible study or a presentation or anything like that, nor am I presuming that you kind of disguise the meal as that presentation. But when you come together at a meal, you have an incredible opportunity, unprecedented, to sit down and hear someone's story and win the right to share yours. And not only have I seen this in my own life, but if you look at Christ's ministry, it's amazing how many times you find him, especially in the book of Luke, it's almost every chapter, sitting at a table with somebody across from him from a very different worldview. And so this stuff works. I've seen it in my own life.
Yeah. I told this story before when we moved to Arizona, went to a cowboy church, and on Wednesday evenings, there would be the men's meeting. And it would always, the meal would always move into, you know, our time that we had for study. And I said to Eddie, who wore the boots and the hat, I said, Eddie, you know, what if we just eat before we get here, and then we'd have more time for the study? Thinking, well, that's the important part of it right there. And he kind of looked over, he's like, shook his head. He said, Chris, you don't understand. There's stuff that happens around the meal. There's stuff that happens here with the food that you can't program. That is just a part of it. And it's like, you know, he had to knock me upside the head. But then I finally saw exactly what he was talking about and what you're talking about. So take me to Revelation chapter 3, to the angel of the church of Laodicea. I've heard this verse all my life. Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and sup with him, meaning I will have dinner with him and he with me. Even there in the book of Revelation, you see this.
Yes, all over the place. I love that passage, and I speak about it briefly in the book because, as you said, Christ is actually speaking to a church. He's not talking to an individual there. He's talking to a church that has forgotten about him. They've gotten distracted. They felt as though they were self-sufficient in that case. And he's giving them an invitation saying, I'm here, and if you'll allow me into your life, I'm going to come in, and I will, of all the ways he could express the intimacy and the relationship he wants to have, he talks about eating with them. And that's the invitation that we have. In fact, all through Scripture, if you look closely, you find that much of theology is couched in these food terms. And that sounds so funny to say, but you know, my wife just got another car last week. And when we got in that car, I don't know if this has happened to you. When we drive down the road, all I see are those cars. It's like they're everywhere now because sure. I'm focused on them. Right. And so when you start to think about meals and you look back at the Scripture, you recognize, well, wait a second. In the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve rebelled and they sinned, it was a dietary rebellion. That was the first one. They ate of the apple they weren't supposed to. When you go to the wedding supper of the Lamb, and after we're caught up with the Lord and we're with him in heaven, it's surrounding a meal. We look at the centrality of the Passover in the Old Testament, where God helped us to identify his holiness and grace and mercy through a meal. We look at the Lord's Supper that's surrounding a meal. And so from Genesis to Revelation, we have this picture of the significance of food as identifying ourselves with Christ and our collective neediness to receive sustenance for life. We depend completely on the Lord.
Yeah. And when you, if you even think of, you know, before Gethsemane, here they are. What are they doing in that upper room? They're having the Seder. You know, they're eating together. They're spending that time together. But you really, I don't want you to be hyperbolic here, but you really believe that people's lives, families can be changed. This could change the world, quote unquote. Is that really true?
I believe that, Chris, and I know that it may sound hyperbolic, but I'm telling you, I've been looking at this from different angles for about a decade, and I am absolutely convinced that this is a fulcrum, and there's other habits that we need to collectively have in our homes and in our Christian walks. I understand that, but if you will just commit to this, it's amazing how many things begin to turn and change and transform in our homes and our lives just by committing to the meal.
What do you say to the person who's listening right now, who's alone, who doesn't have family around them and who's hearing this and saying, you know, God has abandoned me here and I'd love that, but I don't have it.
Yeah, two things about that. So I'm glad you said it. There's a reason I use the language in the book, have five meaningful mealtimes a week with the ones you love, because there are a lot of wonderful people who are living alone in this season. And you need to connect with others around you who you can love and be loved by them. And it changes everything. So find that. And there's another reason I called it Restore the Table, because God can redeem your table and he'll do it.
Love it. And I love the hope there. And I love the food. And I'm with you on the possum and the camel. But there, I'm sure there's good stuff that we can find. Ryan, it's a real pleasure to get to meet you. One real quick story or question. Have you ever learned anything about your wife or your daughters around a meal that you wouldn't have learned had you not been in that meal together?
You know what? I have a daughter with autism, nonverbal, largely hearing impaired, who's 17 years old. And she is now the prayer police. So we've learned most of what we know about her spiritual depth and understanding as she prays around the table and connects through eye contact at the meal. So it's been life-changing with our kids.
What a mercy. What a grace.
Yeah.
How kind of God to give you that 17-year-old. God bless you, friend. Thanks for being with us. Ryan, you come back again, okay?
Thanks, Chris. Okay.
Pastor Ryan Rush, the book releases today, Restore the Table, Discovering the Powerful Connections of Meaningful Mealtimes. If this is something that has stirred your heart as you've listened, you can find a link to it at the website, chrisfabrylive.org. Our program is a production of Moody Radio, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks a lot for listening.